Ladies and gentlemen, welcome wrestling fans worldwide to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of the largest and oldest wrestling family on the planet.
The Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The Stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the Stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name. You will remember it.
And now,
the Stud is here.
Please welcome your Studcast host of television and radio fame, Tony Basilio.
It's incredible, ladies and gentlemen. When you hear that sound, it can only mean one thing. It's time for another award-winning, action-packed edition of your Studcast. Tony Basilio reporting from Knoxville, Tennessee, the epicenter of the Tennessee Stud story. But before we get there, ladies and gentlemen, we're in a town. When I say General Sherman to you, what's it mean? We're going to be in Atlanta, Georgia today on the Studcast. We're going to take you back to 1965. A magical angle that through the annals of the history of wrestling that has not been broken down until now. Because you're on the Studcast. It's episode 22. It's 93 years. It's four generations. It's coast to coast. It's worldwide. It's the best storyteller in the history of podcasting itself. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together. Meet and greet the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. Stud, great Studcast day to you, my friend.
Oh, thank you very much. Certainly glad to be here, Tony. Looking very forward to this one. This is going to be a phenomenal, hopefully a phenomenal experience for wrestling fans around the world. I think you introduced it perfectly, actually, because it is a red letter event in wrestling. What we're going to talk about today is history for Georgia wrestling. The largest crowd to ever witness a wrestling event in the state of Georgia. And it involves my dad. It involves Lester Welch, one of my relatives, is on that card. It's a phenomenal event. And it's one that I witnessed as a junior in high school, actually sold tickets out front for it, and then went up in the top of the stadium and was able to watch it all from there. Absolutely phenomenal event. It's just a pleasure. It's like I saddled the horse today saying, man, we are going to really ride. We're going to run him today. We're not just going to gallop him around. We're going to run him today. And I just hope the fans are set and ready, get themselves all saddled up, because I think they're in for quite a ride. In fact, Tony, I would like to not do any questions today. I won't do any comments today. I want to focus on this event, how it came together and how it all happened and exactly what went down during the event itself. And I want to just really give the fans a taste of something different than what we've done previously. We'll get back to our questions and things after we finish this event. This event may take two programs, could possibly take three, but we're going to take whatever time is necessary. And I think we have an opportunity today to blow fans' minds around the world about how wrestling was done back in the 60s.
Stud, I can't wait. Some of the names you're going to hear mentioned on Studcast 22, Joe Scarpa, talk about a young Bob Armstrong, Argentina Rocca. The Von Brauners are going to make an appearance today. Al Galento and somebody by the name of Rocky Marciano. This is going to be an incredible ride with the Tennessee Stud. July of 1965 is what we're building toward. A record crowd at that time in the state of Georgia. I want you to kind of envision this now. 180% of capacity. That means if you have a 17,000 seat arena, you would put 32,000 people in a 17,000 seat arena. In this case, you'll have to wait for the numbers. It's incredible. Tennessee Stud Ron Fuller, with that in mind, the bell is now ringing. Take it away, my friend.
Oh, man, it's my pleasure. I'm really excited about this one because it has such a personal place in my life, being a junior in high school and being able to see this develop over a period of months. Most matches aren't set to, you have a card and you place a card, the next week you have another card, and the next week you have another card, and you're continually entertaining fans and providing them with wrestling cards and wrestling events. But in this case, this particular event takes 4 months to get to where it's going to go. And that is truly amazing. I've never been involved or seen anything like this in my lifetime. So I want to break it down from the very beginning. In order to do this, I need to back up 7 years, because this event takes place in 1965. But in 1958, the same two wrestlers wrestled in the main event in Mobile, Alabama. And that crowd in Mobile, Alabama was the largest wrestling crowd in the history of the state of Alabama. It is a record that is still there today. No one will ever touch it. 40,000 people saw my dad, Buddy Fuller, wrestle against Mario Galento, and the referee was Joe Lewis. And then obviously a lot of other people participated in that card. But the main event in that card was my dad and Mario Galento. And there was a lot of buildup to that event that took place, and they actually had two fights, and we covered this earlier in one of the other studcasts, but I just want to remind people the history of my dad and Mario Galento. And I just think the two of them did not like each other. I think there was a personal dislike there between the two of them because of the type of matches they had when they did have a match and got together. This match in Mobile, prior to the match, they had two fights in downtown. They ran into each other in a restaurant, got into a fight in the restaurant, fought out into the street, and my dad slammed Mario's face into Mario's Cadillac that was parked out front. The police, it was such a brawl that they called 4 or 5 squad cars, and they backed off because they didn't know how to stop it. They were pretty viciously fighting, obviously. And finally, they did stop it. They took them both to jail, booked them in jail. About a month later, they ran into each other someplace else in downtown Mobile, and there was another fight. And they got arrested again and taken to jail. So these are two guys that really didn't like each other. And my dad, I guess Galento was a great talent, so he used him and he kept him around. But I always to this day felt like that there was something really, really nasty between the two of them. So they wrestle in Ladd Memorial Stadium in Mobile. It was such a huge event. I think Dad saw it back in those days in 58 as this is going to be far beyond what any building will hold in Mobile, Alabama. They were running in a baseball stadium. It was bigger than the baseball stadium. They were selling out the baseball stadium in the summertime. So he says, I want to do this event in Ladd Memorial Stadium, the football stadium, in which they used to play the All-Star game, basically, where they brought in the best senior football players in America, and the scouts all came and watched them. That was an event that took place in Mobile for many years, and it was in this stadium, Ladd Memorial Stadium. They sold out half the stadium, put thousands of people on the field itself. It was a monster event. The match that they had that night was a terrible match, actually, for the fans. It was such a bloody event that it only lasted 5 minutes. There was nobody sitting in the first 3 rows of ringside within 5 minutes because they could not stand it. I heard people tell me that were there after I went back to Mobile and started running there back in the 70s and 80s about being at that match. And they said you could hear the punches hitting the faces from 20 yards away. I mean, it was like it was a brutal event. And it was stopped by the athletic commissioner that was there and watched it. And he went and threw the towel in and said, that's it. It's over. Both of them were pretty much unconscious on their feet. They got a concussion, obviously. Both guys had to be concussed after a deal like that because my dad had his nose broken. He had 2 black eyes for a month. It took a month for his eyes to clear up. And I remember as a kid, and I was about the 2nd grade when this took place, he would go to the mirror in the mornings. After about 3 weeks, his eyes were still swollen shut. And I remember him pulling his eyelids apart, and the blood squirted out of his eye onto the mirror. And I was like, wow, I'd never seen anything like that. I still to this day have never seen anything like that. Mario was 75 stitches in his face. One eye. On my gallery now, I put these photos on there. And for this event, for this number 22, I'm going to use a photo of Mario Glento that was taken about 2 weeks after this match in 1958 with my dad. And that picture I'm going to put on the gallery on top of number 22. And people will have an opportunity to see just exactly what I'm talking about, the brutality of what took place in a five-minute period of time in Mobile, Alabama in 1958. Drew a record crowd in the state of Alabama. Never will anybody, I believe, ever draw that type of crowd again in Alabama. And what's going to happen in this event is going to do the same thing. It is going to be an all-time Georgia record crowd. And there's been a lot of great wrestling companies come in there after my dad left, but none of them ever drew this kind of crowd before. Let's talk a little bit about Mario Glento. I want to give the fans an idea of what this guy looked like and what type of athlete he was. Mario was a brawler. He was never a wrestler. He never went into the ring and wanted to do arm drags and suplexes. He just wanted to fight. He just wanted to brutalize guys. And guys hated to wrestle him because he had no wrestling skills. He was totally different than wrestling anybody else. But he had a look to him that when I was a young kid and when I started watching him, I was 7, 8 years old back in Mobile days in 58. I was scared of him. I could not watch him on television. When he wrestled on TV, it scared me. And I've had fans back in the 80s when I was wrestling there with Continental that would say Mario Glento was the scariest wrestler I ever saw. He had earrings. Long before guys wore earrings, he had earrings in both ears. He had long black hair when people's hair was short in those days, long black hair. He was probably 6'2", weighed probably 210, very thin, very lean, always in shape, always. You could tell by looking at his body that there was no fat on him, and he was working out all the time. He had a brother. He was called his brother. I don't really believe they were brothers, but his name was Al Galento. Al was a shooter back from Roy's day, my grandfather's day, and Galento hooked up with Al. Al tried to teach him how to shoot some, which that made him even more dangerous if he had have learned to shoot. But I don't think Mario was interested in learning how to shoot as a wrestler. He was more interested in learning how to shoot as a fighter. He just wanted to hurt people. And Al would try to teach him how to shoot. So Al is going to be involved in this event that we're about to start talking about that took place in Atlanta. So we set this scene here where Mario's got the long black hair. There's a description of him. If people want to Google him, I think they will be amazed at this guy's history. He was an actor. He actually got into movies in the 50s. And in 1956, he was in a movie called Frontier Woman. Obviously, he wasn't the pivotal character, but he was in that movie. And in 1960, he was in another Western called Natchez Trace. He looked like your quintessential villain, man. He was perfect scenario as a villain in a Western movie. He just had that look about him. He had a charisma to him that he was a unique individual and a unique wrestler because he had very little wrestling skills. It made him totally different than others. I'll give you about two or three real quick stories on Mario. They kind of paint the picture about what Mario was all about. There was a match one time my dad told me about that it was in Pensacola, Florida. This is back in the 50s. And Mario was on that card and dad was leaving the arena. And it was an outside arena. You had to walk down about 30 yards to a gate and go out the gate to get to where your car was. And he said he came out of his dressing room And Mario was just coming out of his dressing room, and Mario sees a guy. There's a guy standing. The crowd is dispersed, but there's maybe 15 people out there in that little parking area. And one guy standing through the fence, and he's got a tire tool in one hand and a knife in the other. And he's slamming the tire tool on the fence, and he says to Mario, he goes, "Mario, I'm going to cut your guts out. I'm just waiting on you to come over here, get on this side of the fence so that I can kill you." And Dad hears all this, and he slides back in the dressing room. He wants to see how Mario handles it. And Mario looks at the guy. They're only about 10 feet apart, but the guy's on the far side of the fence. And he says, "Wait right there." And he starts running down to where the gate is to get out so that he can get around the corner and get to this guy. The guy watches him run down the deal, Dad tells me. And when he turns around the corner, and now he's on the same side of the fence as the guy has a knife and a tire tool. Mario has nothing. And the guy starts running for his car, gets into his car, and cranks his car up. Mario runs right to his car, starts kicking his door, and the guy drives off. He's scared of an unarmed guy. He has a knife and a tire tool. It's just like Mario had he had so much guts when it came to handling that type of deal. Another little story, Mario, and I heard this from Charlie Carr, that you trained me to wrestle, who was back in those days, was there and saw lots of things, made a lot of trips with Mario. He said they went into a bar after a match, and somebody confronted him. Charlie said, "I expected him to just demolish the guy, knock his brains out, kick his head in." And he said he was fairly polite to the guy. And he says, the guy was saying, "You know, that wrestling's all a bunch of fake, you know." He goes, "That's not real blood and all that stuff." Same stuff that a lot of wrestlers used to get. And Mario says, "You know, you're probably right." He goes, "Yeah, I know I'm right." He goes, "You know, when you get their arm up their back and that type of stuff, and they start screaming and acting like it's hurting, you know, it's not really hurting." And Mario says, "You know, you're right about that too." He says, "Let me show you." And he just grabs the guy and he hammer locks him and takes him down on his face in the bar, runs his arm up his back and just starts cranking it like he's pumping water out of an old well. And the guy starts screaming like crazy. Mario, everybody in the bar gets quiet because there's two guys fighting in the floor, it looks like they are. And Mario's cranking the guy's arm, and the guy's screaming like crazy. And Mario goes, "You're great. You're even better than those Fields boys. You're a natural. We need to make a wrestler out of you." He's just cranking the guy, breaking his arm, and making fun of him at the same time. When he lets him go, his buddies grab the guy. They drag him outside. Mario was just a killer. He was the type of guy that was just a killer. I read an article the other day. I did a little research into Mario because I never realized that he was an actor, for one thing. And there was a story in there that took place in Memphis. He had a daughter. He didn't have a son. He had a daughter, and she became a professional wrestler. Her name was Barbara Galento. And he would manage her. He would go to the ring with her. And one night in Memphis, they put him into a cage. He must have been getting involved in the matches, and she was winning by him helping her out, whatever. And they put him in a cage. And during the course of the match, they said that people were screaming at him, obviously. And when they let him out of the cage, that a woman ran up from out of the crowd, and she had a banana. And the fans were calling him Monkey Man because he had the long hair, and he had some hair on his body, too. He looked kind of like an ape of some kind. And she was flinging this. She had a banana in her hand, and she kept shaking it in his face and saying, "Monkey Man, Monkey Man, Monkey Man." And there was another guy that was sitting in the crowd close to where he was, and the guy had been screaming obscenities at him all night. So Mario focused on that guy. He wanted to get to that guy, I guess. So when they let him out of the cage, he grabbed the banana out of the lady's hand, and he ran over to where the guy was. He kept his eye on the guy, and he went right straight to the guy, and he screamed really loud. He says, "My daughter is a whore." And the guy, his mouth went open like, my gosh, did he just say what I thought he said? The guy dropped his mouth open, and Mario shoved that banana so far into his mouth that they choked the guy. They had to come and get him and take him to the hospital to remove the banana. He tried to shove the banana down the guy's throat. So you've got a guy here that's pretty deadly individual, potentially. I mean, nothing like him in all of wrestling. And that is the guy then that's going to arrive in Atlanta, Georgia in the spring of 1965. He's not ever been to Georgia to wrestle. He just captivates the audience. There's a lot of great talent there, but he just stands out from everybody there. Now, when they put him on TV like they would anybody else, and he's there every week. He's a star. Within 4 or 5 weeks, he is the talk of wrestling in Georgia. They say, there's never been a guy like this guy. He's out of his mind. He's a lunatic. So that is his persona. He has done a tremendous job of making people. The one thing about Mario, and it was quite a bit of the same quality in my dad as a wrestler, is there was a believability to Mario Galanto that was amazing.
You know, Stud, you were talking about Al Galanto a second ago at the top of this, and you're listening to the Studcast today, and the Stud's getting it done right now. He's laying it down. He's got a story to tell here about an event that takes place July of 1965, and is setting this up, talking about the Galantos, Mario Galanto, and some of the other players that will play a part in this. But, you know, Spider Galanto, who you were talking about before, Al Spider Galanto, and I'm using the professional or pro wrestling historical society.com. Jimmy Wheeler has written a great article on him. And if I can, just a few things about Al Spider Galanto, because it underscores something that we've talked about here and you specifically, in that these are tough guys and these are different guys. Now, first of all, let it be said that Galanto, Spider Galanto, is a guy who was not to be messed with. Spider Galanto was a star in several territories, including the Gulf Coast, including the West Coast, and then he made a name for himself in Georgia, but also Kansas along the way, became a star attraction in Memphis back in the 40s, which we've already discussed. Huge attraction in Oklahoma in the 50s. But at one point, his fame really rose, where he would take on all local comers in the ring, and $100 stud, which back then is big money, that's several weeks' pay back then, was offered to any local man who could get in the ring and hang with him. And Galanto would visually stretch these people in a ring. Visually stretch these people. Now, it said he actually lost a couple of these matches via disqualification due to a short temper, leading him to just beating the hell out of these challengers by any means necessary. I mean, we're talking about a guy that you did not want to mess with. What do you specifically remember, as you mentioned the name, Al Spider Galanto? What do you remember about being around him as a kid? Because it sounds like this guy's got a few screws loose.
You know, you got two guys now there that have the same last name. They're not brothers, but they are so close in their personality and in their style. Spider was a wrestler. Spider, obviously, as you've pointed out here, he was an actual shooter, and he could do it. Mario couldn't wrestle. He had very little wrestling talent, but he didn't make any difference because he wasn't there to wrestle. He was there to brawl. He was there to kick your butt. Spider was a skinny little runny-looking guy. I remember Spider Galanto. When I think of Spider, I remember that he was less probably than 6 feet tall. He couldn't have weighed 180 pounds. He was thin. That's why he got the nickname Spider. He actually, his arms and legs look like a spider's arms and legs. He had no muscle content to his body. He was a wrestler. He had a great wrestler and a great knowledge of shooting. And that's what's difficult for people, fans, to understand. Just because you have big body and big biceps and a big chest does not mean you're a great wrestler. You don't have to be big to be a shooter. You just have to have technique, and you have to understand leverage, and you have to understand what it takes to beat somebody and to get them in a position to where you can put a hold on them that's going to hurt them and make them quit. And Spider was brilliant at that, but he looked like hell. There was no content to his body. If you saw him on the street and you had an opportunity to pick between him and 10 other guys as to who you thought you could beat in a wrestling match, he'd be the guy you'd pick because he didn't look like he could beat anybody. So I appreciate, man, you're great, Tony, at picking these things up and bringing them. You know, I don't read anything about Spider. You know, I read a little bit about Mario in preparation here, but Spider was a unique individual. So you have two Galentos that come to Georgia, to Atlanta, in winter, early spring of 1965, that just captivate the wrestling audience there. We talked about this in earlier episodes. They're on the Eye of Atlanta, Channel Atlanta, Channel 11 in Atlanta, about 6 o'clock on Saturday nights, a heck of a time. They had a television commentator named Ed Caporal that was one of the best, great, great commentator back in the days long before Gordon Solie and some of the other great commentators that have come and joined the sport and been part of it. But Caporal was really a great. They had a great time slot. They had a lot of viewers because they had already started to make wrestling very popular there again. And then you add these two individuals to the mix, and it puts Atlanta on fire. Things just start to crank up. People start talking about wrestling. They were never wrestling fans. And that's what happens when you get these type of individuals.
You know, another thing you talked about with Galento, and we're back to Al Galento again, who is a second in this match that's going to take place as we set this thing up. And you're going to talk about the formation of the angle and how it came about. And we're spending time here in July of 1965. In fact, we're camped here on episode number 22 of your Studcast. And this is certainly a special edition. The Stud has decided we're throwing out all the questions. We're throwing out all the comments. We're going right to the meat of the matter. And you talked about how the guy didn't have a tremendous physique. The thing about some of the tough guys of that era is that they didn't need physiques. I think about a guy who was really popular here and somebody that you really love. And I'll never forget the day he passed away. I do a local radio show in Knoxville. And I had the mayor of this very town calling here in near tears. I had people of all generations calling the day that Ron Wright had passed away. And he's another guy that looked very slight, wasn't a very muscular guy, wasn't a muscle-bound guy, but nobody questioned his toughness. That's what was unique about these guys. They didn't need to sell toughness because you knew they were people that had a screw loose, and you knew they were people that would snap your arm off for looking at them wrong. Am I wrong, Stud?
That's exactly right. I mean, Ron Wright, I can't wait. I'm going to do some things. I'm going to jump into something else for just a second, but I'll come back to where we are. But I've had so many people talk to me about the program's length. They say, Ron, your content is fabulous, and the hour just goes by so fast. Is there a way you could do something more? And I want to do what I'm going to call a super stud cast. I'm going to do it once a month, Tony. We're going to give fans 2 hours. It's what I would love to do anyway. And what we're going to do, this program, and the reason I'm enthused about this is this program's going to last for 2 hours. What we're talking about may take 2-3 hours. And I want to do programs, the super stud cast, in which I pick one individual. Ron Wright is an example, since you brought him up. Ron Wright is an ideal guy. It takes at least 2 hours to really explain Ron Wright. Andre the Giant is another guy. I have not talked about Andre at all on this program, and I want to do a super stud cast on Andre the Giant. I want to do a super stud cast on Japan. I want to do one on Australia. I want to do one on Vince McMahon and what he has done to wrestling. I've got ideas for these super stud casts, and we're going to start doing them in January, and the fans are going to have the opportunity to hear 2 hours of a deep dive into an individual in which I'm able to tell all the stories. And that's what I really want to do. And we're going to get to that point. But Mario and a thin guy, Ron Wright did not look like a tough guy. Ron Wright is the type of guy you would might want to say, hey, I think I can whip your butt. But if you ever watched him, you would think twice about it because his attitude, these smaller guys are dangerous. The old saying, dynamite comes in small packages, and that's pretty true in wrestling. You don't know who is good and who is not, who to jump on and who to run from. So, you know, Mario and Al Galento were two guys that you wanted to run from. You did not want to mess with those guys. So we've got them now. If you want to, we'll take a break, Tony, and we'll throw it away to and let Dave have a second and let me catch my breath. And we're going to dive in to how this all developed in 1965 between my dad and Mario and Al Galento and the whole thing.
Why don't we do that? We'll come back on the other side as you're listening to the Studcast. It's 93 years. It's four generations, coast to coast, worldwide. Spread the word for us. You got the best storyteller in the history of wrestling itself, in the history of podcasting itself, getting ready to take you inside July 1965, a record crowd in Atlanta, Georgia, a super card. And one name you're going to hear him discuss here later on is Rocky Marciano and how he came to become part of this angle. We'll do exactly that as we continue on the other side. Without further ado, David Summers, tell him about it on your Studcast.
The Tennessee Stud loves Christmas and has created a special commemorative Christmas offer for you, someone in your family, or any stud fan. Give a stud gift this Christmas for the first time. Ride over to the website at tnstud.com. That's tnstud.com. And click on the stud store. Find a great gift idea in the photo section. We all know photos make a great Christmas present. So how about your choice of one or more of the four 8x10 glossy photos available there. Have them personally autographed to whomever you choose with Merry Christmas 2017 if you like. And they're all signed by the Tennessee Stud himself. This commemorative photo will be a one-of-a-kind collector's item and a very special gift. Or maybe someone you know would love to have the classic Studcast t-shirt in black or the new blue on Christmas morning. Give your loved ones or yourself something really different this Christmas. This special commemorative Christmas offer must be ordered on the website only at tmstud.com before December 19th to ensure delivery by Christmas Eve. This offer will continue if ordered by January 1st, 2018. From all of us here at the Studcast in Studland, we appreciate your support, and we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Don't forget, tnstud.com. That's tnstud.com. You are back, seated ringside, on this edition of the Ron Fuller Studcast.
Thank you. The golden tones there of the great David Summers. Thank you. 93 years, four generations. Studcast 22. That's hard to believe. Several months now he's been doing this. Thanks to everybody for making this the fastest growing wrestling podcast in wrestling podcasting. We're an independent. We're the talk of the industry right now. Why? Because what Ron Fuller's doing for you is so unique. He's the storyteller. He takes one subject, like today, and has the ability to hold your interest and open it up. We take you back to 1965. We're in Atlanta, Georgia. It is a supercard put together by his father, and it is going to be a dynamite part two here on episode 22. Ron Fuller, my Tennessee stud, welcome back.
Well, thank you very much. Had myself a little Coke here or whatever and got myself ready to go for the second part. And I want to take it from here. Well, I've introduced the characters, basically. Everybody knows my father's Buddy Fuller. Dad's an old shooter himself. He doesn't have a problem with Mario. I think he dislikes Mario. Mario dislikes him, I believe. And I think there's a true hatred for one another that sees on the bottom of all these matches. So Mario and Al are in the Georgia territory. My dad is the promoter, and he is starting to wrestle some, but he doesn't wrestle frequently. He's not a top guy at this point. And Mario, once he comes, he starts to focus on Dad immediately. He goes on all of his television interviews, even if he's not wrestling against my dad, and he never wrestles against my dad, but he always brings up the promoter. And he says, you know, the promoter is that Buddy Fuller, the guy, the chicken guy that really doesn't. He wants to be a wrestler, but he really doesn't want to wrestle a real wrestler. He really makes these personal interviews that I, as a junior in high school, watch the wrestling program, obviously. And I start to get mad, literally mad at this guy, you know, like, Dad, what's the deal with him? You know, why is it that he just focuses on you? Dad says, I don't know. But he says, you know, he's getting over. He's drawing money. So Mario continues this process. Now, the commentator there on the program is a guy named Ed Capel. Ed has a personal, feels very strongly toward my dad. He likes him. And every time Mario gets off tangent in his interviews and leaves the opponent he should be talking about to jab at my dad, Ed stands up for Dad. He goes, now wait, you know, he's the promoter here, and he's trying to handle the promotional part of the business, and he doesn't wrestle every Friday night here in Atlanta like the rest of it. And Mario would just say, well, I don't care. I don't like him, and I don't like to do business with him. I'm surprised he has guts enough to keep me here because he knows that I whipped his ass many, many years in Mobile, one of the worst beatings he ever took in his life. So he brings up this 8 year earlier match in Alabama in which they fought like madmen and hurt and really disfigured their faces and their minds probably from that match. And so he keeps harping on that. He stays on that topic big time, and he never gets away from it. Then he starts making fun. We live in Griffin, Georgia. It's about 30 miles south of Atlanta. We have a farm. It's probably 200 acres. We've got a horse barn and a rodeo arena that we can work out horses in. We do horse shows and things like that. Dad has, we probably have 25 horses and a big enough barn to hold all those horses. And we show a bunch of them, and it becomes a lifestyle for Dad. And when he makes wrestling photos, he makes them on some of his key horses. He had one that was a $20,000 horse, a very expensive horse for back in those days. And his name was Scooter Mee. He took photos on that horse, and he would sell them at wrestling matches. So Mario starts making fun of the fact that my dad is a cowboy. He's not a wrestler. He's a cowboy. And he would say, you know, one reason he doesn't wrestle is because he's not in shape. Because if he had a match with a real wrestler, he'd get the hell beat out of him. And riding a horse, I remember one of his interviews that really peed me off, really made me pissed at him, was he said, you know, Buddy Fuller, he says, have you ever thought about the fact that riding a horse is tremendous exercise for the horse? But the guy who's riding the horse is not getting any exercise at all. In another interview I remember, he said, you know, I would like to kick Buddy Fuller's butt. And he says, I'm in such good shape. He said, I can run the 30 miles between here and Griffin. I'll run to his farm in Griffin, Georgia, whip his ass, and run back home to Atlanta in the same day. And I remember thinking, well, you cocky. It was so he is building this match without there being a match there. The way I looked at it, he's forcing my dad's hand into taking a match with him. And I figure, you know, when it goes down, it's going to be somewhat similar to what happened in Mobile 8 years earlier. And I'm hesitant as a young boy to want to see my dad get involved in that. So Mario pushes. He pushes and pushes week after week after week. Now, he's there 2 months or more, and he's wrestled pretty much every babyface there. He's beaten them all, but he spends half his time talking about my dad rather than the match he's about to have with them. He forces the issue to the point that my dad comes on one day and says, you know, I've really heard all I want to hear about it. I'm willing to give a match to Mario Galindo. I want to wrestle Mario Galindo. Now, they take this match, and they have this match in the Atlanta Auditorium. We talked about this building before. It's a great old building, grand old building. It's the place that they wrestle every Friday night. Now, they're already selling out. So, you know, they're going to sell out this one. It's going to be a real big crowd. But Dad goes ahead, and he books it into the auditorium. In that match, I went as a kid. I watched the match, and Mario totally destroyed my dad. I mean, he humiliated him, I thought. He made it obvious that Dad wasn't in shape. He made it obvious that he was a tougher guy and a meaner guy at that point. I felt a little bit sorry for my dad at the time because, you know, I was 16 years old, and I wanted to see him do well. And so my dad, he picked up on it. I mean, Mario just kicked his butt, literally kicked his butt in the match. And so the next day on Saturday, Friday night is the match. On Saturday, Dad goes on television and he apologizes to all his fans. He says, basically, I'm sorry. maybe he was right in saying that I'm not in shape and that riding horses is not going to get me in shape to beat him. And what I want to do now is first apologize to everybody for how my performance and my lack of ability in the ring. Took a lot of guts to do that. And then he said, I want to do this. They had an arena that their office was in Atlanta, and we talked about that earlier. In it, they had a wrestling ring. So Dad says, this is exactly what you brought up a minute ago with Al Galento, where he challenged the fans. Dad says, I'm going to go down to the office. He gave him the address, the location in Atlanta. And he says, I'm going to be there 5 days a week from Monday to Friday. I'm going to start at 9 o'clock in the morning. And I want anybody that wants to wrestle me, wants to wrestle a wrestler, wants to come and work out, wants to see if they're tough. Anybody that can beat me, I want to find those guys. I'll make wrestlers out of them if you can beat me, but I'm going to get myself in shape. And in July, this was about 6 weeks out from July, he says, in July, I'm going to wrestle Galento again. He says, this time, I'm going to beat the hell out of him. So that was his interview. That was a basic interview. He started then every person that came to that building from 9 o'clock until 5 o'clock most days. He would wrestle anywhere from 20 to 30 guys during that time period. They would come with tights. They would come with shorts on. They would come, they're big guys, little guys, guys of all sizes. He told the fans on that television interview, come down. I want you to watch it. I want you to be there. And fans would come, and there was no admission charge. They would come and sit in the ringside seats there. There would be 200 or 300 of them sometimes, and they would just run those guys in one after another after another. And Dad would stretch them, and Dad would beat them, and Dad, he wasn't hurting them, but he would make them give up. He would put them in a submission hold. You'd hear them scream, and that was it. He would let them go. They would roll over. They would leave the ring. He'd take a five-minute break, and they would send the next one in. This went on. I was actually there many, many of those days. And sometimes he would let me wrestle a couple of them so that I could get some experience with my shooting, because he was teaching me a lot of things. So he would do this 5 days a week for 5 weeks. During that time period, I don't know how many people he beat. No telling how many guys he wrestled. But they would come down with 16-millimeter cameras, and they would film these things. And then on Saturdays, they would take those tapes back and show them back with these shoots he was having with fans from around the Atlanta area. He said, if you live in Georgia, I don't care if you live in Alabama, or you're up in North Carolina and you hear about this, you're welcome to come. I want to take on all comers, anybody who wants to wrestle. I don't think it had ever been done. I don't know of any time in the history of my knowledge of the sport that anybody had ever taken on that type of thing to prove his ability. And it created such a monumental talking platform among wrestling fans. It was fabulous.
That's amazing stuff. I mean, when you think about how they put that angle together, and you would have to portray the reality of it and how real the angle was in order to get it across, right? I mean, even though they had done this before. And that's the trick of this. The trick of this is to make this thing look as unique as possible. What did those guys do behind the scenes? Were there things that went on behind the scenes that you would do, sort of like actors would, in order to put yourself in more of a mindset in order to make that thing, make the heat seem as real as possible? Any things behind the scenes that would have went on back then?
You know, I wasn't privy to that type of stuff much. I wasn't in dressing rooms and things like that. I do know that Mario it opened the door for him to be able to critique these things. Dad wasn't going on the television program. They were just coming and filming these shoots, and then they would show them on the program, and then Mario would come out and do an interview afterward. And he would laugh and joke about the quality of the guys. Did you see that fat guy, the second one he showed parts of? You know, he was a punk and a jerk. I mean, he would run down every one of them. These Georgia guys, he really started to create He upped the level of his heat, went off the charts, because it gave him an opportunity to start knocking Georgians, to knock the local people about how fat and how out of shape they are, and look at me, I'm a specimen. And he really, truly was. It all worked to just crank this match that was about to happen. And it's 5 weeks out, 4 weeks out, 3 weeks out. It's getting closer and closer, and the buildup is just getting bigger and bigger.
Stud, you're getting ready to introduce somebody. Let's talk about the formation of the card before we go to the special guest referee and what's getting ready to happen. How does your father decide who gets to be on that super card at that point when they're trying to fill a baseball stadium?
Well, first of all, let me back up just a little bit. First of all, he has to find, there's never been a match in that baseball stadium that he's aware of at this time, okay? And we're going to talk a little bit about this baseball stadium in the future, maybe in the next episode. But he's got to find a building. He's got to find a place to hold this event, because this is not an auditorium event. This is far beyond the capacity of any place that Atlanta has. The biggest facility in Atlanta at that time in 1965 is the Ponce de Leon Baseball Park. It's called Ponce de Leon Park. It's on Ponce de Leon Avenue. It sits directly across the street from the Sears and Roebuck National Headquarters. It is a six-lane street with three lanes going both directions, one of the few six-lane streets in America probably at that time, certainly in Atlanta, the only six-lane street, or one of the only six-lane streets in Atlanta. And it's a baseball stadium that has a capacity of 20,000 people. And so he has to decide first, where do I take this event so that I can maximize this talk and this buildup for it? So he decides to go to this baseball stadium. So he announces the fact that this is going to be at the baseball stadium, biggest facility in town. In 1966, I believe the Atlanta Braves come to town. And so Atlanta is becoming a big baseball city, and they're about to build this big stadium out there on 75 in Atlanta that they're going to play baseball in. But this stadium here is the biggest facility. So it's really, really the perfect location. So he has the facility set up. We're going to cover the card here real quickly, and I think we're probably going to be pretty close to out of time for this one. But your question was, how does he decide who's going to be on that card? He wants to have a world event. He has to bring in some world personalities for this event. He brings in the world tag team champions, who are the Von Braunner brothers from Germany. They have a manager called Gentleman Saul Weingraf. They are the world tag champions, have been for a considerable length of time, recognized pretty much around the world as the best tag team in the world. Both of those guys are monsters. They are about 6'5". They weigh about 250 pounds or more. And we're talking 1965. These guys are monsters. And they have the ability to just demolish wrestling teams. They're a great, great team. So he decides he's going to have a World Tag Team Championship match. He puts against those two guys, Ray Gunkel, who is tremendous wrestler there, has a tremendous background in Atlanta, a big star already in Atlanta, and he brings in his uncle, Roy's brother, Lester. Lester Welch and Ray Gunkel are going to wrestle the Von Braunners for the World Tag Team Championship. Phenomenal match. He decides that he will allow Al Galento, Spider, to be in Mario's corner, but he then thinks that, you know, I need to balance this out somehow. So he says, I need a special referee. And so he goes, this is a great choice too. He goes and picks then the undefeated, and I believe this is true, Tony, and I'm sure you will look it up, but the only undefeated heavyweight boxing champion of all time, Rocky Marciano. He calls Rocky Marciano and speaks to him and says, I would like for you to referee a wrestling match. And he talks Marciano into coming to Atlanta, referee that match. Now, he also then goes to South America. He looks to South America, to one of the biggest wrestling talents in the world at this time, to Argentino Roca, who is Antonio Apollo, from Argentina. He is a high flyer, just a phenomenal talent in the ring. Just does fabulous, fabulous backflips and drop kicks off the top rope. And he's a tremendous star. He books Rocco, but he books him against Sputnik Munro. Now, Sputnik Munro is a star already. Now, Sputnik doesn't like the fact that Rocco is a worldwide star and Sputnik is not a worldwide star. So there is animosity right there. As soon as he books the match, he realizes that anything can happen in this match, you know, and that's one of his deals. He throws Joe Scarpa. He throws a young Bob Armstrong on that card. He fills that card with guys that are already stars there. He now has a fabulous main event, him against Galento, refereed by Rocky Marciano, Al Galento in the corner of Mario. He has a world tag team champion. He has a world star in Antonio Rocco against another guy that's a big star, Sputnik Munro, a big heel there. He has put together the event that is going to draw a tremendous crowd. No one knows what it's going to draw. But it's once you see the card, you go, wow, this thing is going to be big. And he has the venue for it. And the stage is set at that point for what's going to happen on a July night in 1965.
Yeah, and you talk about Marciano's involvement in that stud. And this is what you were dealing with in Rocky Marciano at the time. You're talking about a guy who held the world title from 52 to 56. He went undefeated in his career. He defended his title 6 times against guys like Jersey Joe Walcott, Ezra Charles, Archie Moore, et al. A guy who was as popular as humanly possible, went 49-0. And think about how over this guy would have been. You know, you think about a guy who ended up on television, appeared in an episode of Combat, and that was in the early 60s, which was absolutely huge. And a man who, by the time this card happened, was 4 years away from passing away. But still, you can't get more over than the heavyweight champion of the world at that time, when boxing was absolutely huge in this country. Boxing and baseball in the mid-60s, and wrestling. I mean, you put those two things together, boxing and wrestling, at that point in time, it doesn't get any better than that. I mean, one could argue that this would have been a more unstoppable combination than what Ali and Inoki did 10 to 12 years later, although they had better technology then with the closed circuit capabilities and being able to fill arenas. But this would have been a huge deal having Marciano involved in this match.
Absolutely. If you think about it in terms of today's wrestling, if you had a national television program, had the Atlanta program been Vince's Raw or SmackDown, and have the capability of being publicized across America that everybody could see it, what could you draw for this match? I mean, it's unbelievable. You could have drawn, there's no stadium in America that could hold the number of people that would want to see that event. So it's a spectacular event by anybody's standards, and certainly by Georgia's standards. And the question is now, not how big it's going to be, it's how many people are going to try to come and see that event. And I think that's a good place for us to pick it up next week. We will talk about what happens on that night. And what happens on that night is truly amazing, too. It's a story within itself. So this is why we didn't do questions this week. We did no comments this week. I wanted to set the stage for this monumental event that is going to set the all-time record. I don't care. WWE's been there. WCW was headquartered in Atlanta. The Omni was 18, 19,000 seats. No one ever gets close to the number of people that will actually see this match. This will be the all-time biggest crowd ever to watch a wrestling match in the state of Georgia.
Stud, unbelievable work by you this week here on the Studcast. Next time we convene, I'd like to have a date in January, if we could, when you want to do that. We're going to do a live show. How you want to do that, man? Have you decided how we're going to do that?
I've not decided yet, but I do know that I want to do these two-hour programs. I want to do it. I have had so many people ask for it, and I want to do the two-hour programs. I've already set, and I have a list of probably 20 of them that I can, off the top of my head, and I know that I get into things here, Tony. The program's too short for me sometimes. I'm cranked right now. I could roll through another hour and finish this, but our studcasts are set up to be an hour long each episode or somewhere in that area. Sometimes we run long. Sometimes we run a few minutes short of that. But I do want to do these two-hour super studcasts, I'm going to call them. We're going to do our first one in January. We'll decide, you and I will discuss how best to do it, whether we want to do it somehow live. We'll figure out the best way we're going to do it. But I want to tell the fans to be prepared that it is coming in the future. And those programs, I'll guarantee you, will be the best they've ever heard. Andre the Giant is an example. I have so many stories. My personal relationship with Andre is unlike any wrestler that I've ever been with. Andre and I become personal friends, and I can't wait to tell my stories of Andre, because there is one of the greatest guys on earth. Ron Wright is another prime example. He's definitely a super stud cast. He's just a phenomenal character. I want to do with the Jim Barnett. I want to do one on Vince that I talked about. What happened to the territories and why it happened and where we are now with wrestling in the world. I mean, there's so many things that I want to talk about, and this is going to give me an opportunity to really have these super, super events in which they last 2 hours and people go away hopefully saying, I've never heard anything like that. And that's where we're headed, Tony.
Stud, unbelievable job by you in this episode. If folks want to interact with the Tennessee Stud, Ron, tell them how they can do that, because there are ways to reach you, and you want to make yourself as accessible as humanly possible to the living listener of the Studcast.
That's for sure. I'm social media. I'm definitely highly involved in social media. I think it's a great way to stay in contact with my fans. You can go on Twitter or Instagram. You can go to Ron Fuller Welch. At Facebook, I have two sites on Facebook. One is totally filled now. Another is growing dramatically. But it is an athlete Facebook site in which I can put on as many people as want to become friends there. So Ron Fuller Welch on Facebook is still available, a few slots in there, but it's almost totally filled. But Ron Fuller Tennessee Stud, that you spelled out the word Tennessee, Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller Tennessee Stud. You can like me on that site. I don't have to go back and say, I want you as a friend. You can like me and you are a friend. You are connected to me. And I try to get back to people as much as I can and answer their questions and take these questions sometimes that are asking the program. There's a lot of interaction with me there on those sites. My website is Tennessee Stud, tnstud.com. The website is where it all starts. The studcasts are all on there. Obviously, you can pick up my studcast on iTunes, Podcast Addict, Stitcher, any podcast outlet in the world. You can go to Ron Fuller's studcast and get the studcast itself. There's no charge for the studcast. It's absolutely free to you. And we love doing these programs here. And that's basically where we are. The gallery. I want the fans to take a look when you go to that website at the gallery. The gallery is becoming it's phenomenal at this point. Every episode has the photo that goes along with it. And this week, this program, please go and look at number 22. You want to take a look at Mario Galento 2 weeks after the 1958 match with my dad. It's absolutely phenomenal. He has holds in his head still 2 weeks later. Eyes are still black. You know, a picture's worth 1,000 words, and I can't explain what this all is going to happen and what this is going to be like. This event, this next event with my dad and Mario Galento, is going to be more spectacular probably than the first time. So just thank you, everybody. Before I go, I want to thank everybody for, we have such a great following now worldwide. We're really worldwide. And as you said, we're the only independent, or one of the only independents that's ever grown to the point where we are. We and Arcadian Vanguard distributes us, a great organization. They have some great podcasts there. They got the Jim Cornette, the BTT. They've got great people. Brian Last is huge, 605, wonderful, wonderful podcast. I'm pleased to be a part of that. But we are an independent. We do our own thing here. We do a program that's like no other. Nobody does one like we do. We talk. It's like I had a guy wrote a comment the other day, and he said it's kind of like watching wrestling back in the 70s. Every episode leads to the next episode. And that's exactly where we are. We're talked about. We've set the stage for a monumental wrestling event in Georgia, and we're going to finish that. We're going to start and see if we can finish it in the next studcast. If we don't, we'll carry it over into the following one. We're chronological, and we are sure happy to be here. It's a pleasure for me to be able to tell these stories.
Your Tennessee Stud, ladies and gentlemen, will sign off now. It's been awesome having him. Episode 22 is about expired. It's 93 years. It's four generations. It's coast to coast. It's worldwide. The best storyteller in the business just laid it on the line for you. You can touch him online at Twitter, Ron Fuller Welch, and Instagram as well. On Facebook, Ron Fuller Tennessee Stud. You're invited to join that page. Interact with the thousands and thousands of the Studcast listeners all around the world. And then the website is tnstud.com. Until we meet again. For all behind the scenes, including the great Brian Last, making the Studcast a reality, and his tremendous organization at Arcadian Vanguard, this is Tony Basilio wishing you a great Studly Studcast week.
Thanks for joining us today for this historic Studcast. The true story continues next week. So fool Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud.
One, two, three.
This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains. This Studcast is distributed by Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network.